Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Braskem's fourth quarter of 2018 earnings conference call. Today with us, we have Fernando Mussa, CEO, Pedro Freitas, CFO, and Pedro Teixeira, Corporate Financial and Investor Relations Director. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After Braskem remarks are completed, there will be a question and answer section. At this time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. We have simultaneous webcast that may be accessed through Braskem IR website at www.braskem-ri.com.br/ and the MZiQ platform, where the slide presentation is available for download. Please feel free to flip through the slides during the conference call. There will be a replay facility for this call on the website. We remind you that questions which will be answered during the Q&A session may be posted in advance on the website. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Braskem management and on information currently available to the company. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Braskem and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I will turn the conference over to Pedro Teixeira. Mr. Teixeira, you may begin your conference.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for participating in the conference call of Braskem for the year end 2018. Let's jump straight to the slide number four, where we talk about the main deliveries for this year. In terms of operational highlights, we want to highlight that 2018 was the full year of the Camaçari unit in Bahia running as a flexible cracker, and 18% of that unit was produced using ethane. It's the flexible cracker that we have in Brazil. In terms of value creation, Braskem 2018 engaged in a voluntary commitment to the circular economy of plastics together with other ABIQUIM members, and also, along with 27 other global companies in plastic value chain, founded the Alliance for the End of Plastic Waste. Also, the company evolved in the construction of the new PP facility in the U.S., reaching 48.3% of completion, and have already invested $382 million in this specific project. Braskem signed a wind power purchase agreement that will allow the expansion of Folha Larga wind power complex in Bahia State that EDF Renewables is currently developing. On the same environmental angle, Braskem and Siemens established a partnership to improve energy efficiency in the cracker of São Paulo. Finally, in 2018, it was a year that Braskem opened its new office in India, aiming to develop new business opportunities and sales in this region. In regards to liability management, 2018 was a year that the company decided to prepay $200 million of its perpetual bonds as an attempt to reduce the debt interest expenses. Also, Braskem closed two ECA facilities, one with Hermes, $225 million to finance its investments, a portion of its investment in the new PP plant in the U.S., and also a facility of $295 million with SACE for regular investments of Braskem, boosting the relationship with Braskem with Italian suppliers. With respect to credit rating, S&P and Moody's changed Braskem outlook to stable from negative, which is positive. For the first time, Braskem is rating three notches above the sovereign Brazilian rate by S&P. Braskem remains investment grade by S&P and Fitch. And finally, Braskem posted in 2018 a record free cash flow generation of 7.1 billion reais in 2018, an increase by 187% to the amount that was posted in 2017. And with that amount, the company is proposing a dividend distribution of 2.670 billion reais, which represents approximately 100% of the net income distributable to shareholders. Moving on to slide number 5, we will begin to talk about the operational performance in each of the main regions of Braskem. So in Brazil, the demand grew in 2018 by 2%, and it is important to highlight that it was the first year, 2018 was the first year after 4 consecutive years whereby the PVC market increased. It shows at the beginning of a recuperation of the PVC market. Sales of Braskem were down by 2% in 2018 as compared to 2017 as a consequence of the truck strike, stoppage for maintenance, the blackout, and the accident of the soda chlorine facility that we had in the first quarter of 2018. So a lot of unpredictable events affected the availability of resins, and these impacted also the market share of the company that was reduced from 69% to 66%, and also the availability of products to be exported. In Brazil, Braskem posted an EBITDA of $1.9 billion, 27% down as compared to 2017, and representing 61% of the total EBITDA of Braskem. Moving to the next slide, then we talk about the results and the operational performance in the U.S. and Europe. In the U.S., the demand remains very robust. There was an increase in 2018 by 3%. However, we had several unpredictable issues, operational issues in 2018, unplanned turnarounds due to the severe winter that affect the region, and a 50-day turnaround in the Oyster Creek that affected availability of products. That's why our sales in the U.S. Were down by 9%. In Europe, the demand was reduced by 3%, affected by the reduction in the economy growth, affecting especially the automotive sector, and our sales were down by 11%. There was some logistic restriction for moving propylene, which is the feedstock that we use in Europe. In that region, U.S. and Europe, the EBITDA was down by 6%, totaling $680 million, representing 19% of the total EBITDA of Braskem. Moving to the next slide, now we talk about the results in Mexico. In Mexico, demand remains robust. There was an increase in 2018 by 2.7%. However, our sales in the domestic market and exports were down by 18% due to the lower feedstock supply and also scheduled turnarounds that happened in the first semester of 2018. It is important to highlight the breakdown of exports. We are now channeling less exports to Asia and focusing more in exports to Central America. In Mexico, we posted an EBITDA of $617 million, 1% down to 2017, representing 20% of the EBITDA of Braskem. Moving to the next slide, we talk about the corporate capex without considering the capex of Braskem Idesa. And we invested 2.8 billion reais in 2018. 1.9 billion reais in operational investment, and the remaining amount is in regard to strategic investment. From these strategic investments, the biggest amount refers to the investment, the PP facility that we are building in the U.S. that in 2018 required around $200 million. However, we have already invested $382 million. This facility is expected to become operational in the first half of 2020, and at the end of 2018, it reached a completion rate of 48.3%. For 2019, the expected it is expected in total investment of 3.3 billion reais. We need to highlight that there is still an important amount to be invested in the PP plant, around $220 million for 2019. And also on the operational side, we have as main investments the Bahia cracker turnaround that is expected to happen in the fourth quarter 2019, and also 145 million reais for healthy, safety, and environmental. Moving to the slide number 8, then we talk about the free cash flow generation of the company. So the company posted a total EBITDA of 11.3 billion reais. It helped the number with a working capital variation positive one of a billion reais. Then it came with the capex that 1.9 billion reais that we have already discussed it. 1.9 billion of interest paid that was lower this year as compared to 2017, and an amount of 930 million reais of income tax and the 826 of strategic investment. So if we add all of these numbers, we get to a number of around 7.1 billion reais, which is a record free cash flow. And it represents an increase by 187% of the free cash flow generation of the company in 2017. Moving to the slide number 9, it shows that the debt profile of Braskem, leverage rates, debt profile remains relatively stable. We ended the year with a very robust cash position, $1.8 billion, without counting the $1 billion of revolving credit facility that we have available for if the company needs. It's on draw, this revolving credit facility. The company closed the year with a net debt EBITDA ratio of 2.06, an average debt term of 14 years, and the cash position is available to cover the amortization of the debt for 40 years. The average weighted cost of capital is FX variation plus 5.5, which is lower than 2017 as a consequence of the liability management that the company made in 2018. Moving to slide number 11, the company total a net profit for 2018 of 2.9 billion reais, 30% down as compared to 2017. An important point to highlight here is the negative of the impact of the FX variation in our financing expenses. earning per share were also down by 30%. We posted at 3.6 reais per share of earning in 2018. And the company is proposing a dividend payment for 2019 of 2.6 billion reais. This amount represents 37% of the free cash flow generation of the company that the company generated in 2018. And if approved by the shareholders, that it is expected to happen in April, it will represent 100% of the net income distributable to the shareholders. Moving on, let's talk about the scenario. In general, the spreads that will affect the products that we produce in Brazil are expected to be lower in 2019 as compared to 2018. There is the slowdown in the growth of the demand in China, and also there is yet some new capacity of PE that is still expected to enter to become operational in 2019, and this should affect the spread, especially for PE. It is important to highlight that on the vinyl side, it is expected an improvement on the spread. So there is expected a recuperation, especially on the caustic soda prices. On the international business of Braskem, the spread remains very, very attractive in the U.S. It is expected an increase by 7.5% for 2019 as compared to 2018, and the company should be able to begin to capture more of these spreads once its project of a new PP facility becomes operational in the beginning of 2020. In the U.S., the outlook is negative because of the lower demand, and in Mexico, we expect a drop in the spread by 33.5%, given the higher ethane prices as a consequence of fracking and the logistic restriction. Finally, getting to the final slide of the presentation, this is the outlook for 2019. So in terms of the spreads for the products that we produce in Brazil, it's negative. It should be, on average, positive in U.S., since we have more capacity in U.S. than in Europe. And the spread should be negative in Mexico for the reasons that we have already discussed. In terms of demand, the outlook is positive in all the regions. In Brazil, the demand for resins should grow by 2.2%. And actually the growth of the economy should be around 2.2%, and it's important to remember that we have a elasticity, that the resin demand has an elasticity of 1.5 times the growth of the economy. In the U.S., the growth of the economy should be around 2.5%, in the Eurozone should be a bit less, 1.6%, and the elasticity in that region is a little bit lower than it is in Brazil. It's a more mature market. It's one time. In Mexico, the growth is expected to be 2.1%, the growth of the economy, and the elasticity in demand in Mexico is 1.5 times. It is important to highlight that the utilization rates for 2019 should be better, especially in Brazil and in U.S., whereby in 2018 we had several unpredictable events like such as the truck strike, the blackout in Brazil, the accident that we faced in the soda chlorine facility in the first quarter of 2018, and some outage that we have in our facilities in U.S. For maintenance that we don't expect to happen again in 2019. In Mexico, we expect the same levels of ethane supply, so we are not considering better utilization rates. All in all, we expect EBITDA for 2019 relatively stable as compared to the EBITDA that we posted in 2016. So let's move to our Q&A session.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this or any time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question that you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Mr. Gustavo Levato from Banco Santander would like to ask a question.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I have three questions. So the first one regarding the operations in Brazil. I'd like to understand the reasons for the 4 points for 4 points of market share loss during the fourth quarter compared to the third quarter. So the 63% is well below the past desired levels the company had in the past. If I'm not wrong, it was above 70%, so I want to know and try to understand the reasons. The second question is regarding the issues that affect the production in the United States, Europe, and Mexico in 2018. Are they totally solved? And then lastly, focusing on the recycle of plastics that the company mentioned in the release, how could it impact the demand for resins in companies viewing for the next years, and also the investment of $1.5 billion for the program that the company joined. Will the company need to participate in these investments or not? Thank you.
Hello, Gustavo. I'm going to start with the market share loss by commenting that it's important to look at this in aggregate and not focus too much on the month by month, especially in the back end of the year when we have a lot of challenges from a inventory building or not by clients. And in this fourth quarter, given the significant drop in oil prices that happened in the middle of the quarter, it generated a lot of behavior around clients to postpone purchases. And if you look at the market share in Brazil and the alternative supplier is imports that have a longer lead time for decision making, so products arrive that were decided 2-3 months before. So I would encourage you to look more on the overall picture. 2018 was indeed a year where we lost some market share, but a lot because of our challenges on the production side that led to a small reduction overall in market share. We had for the year 66% compared to 69% the previous year. And also, as we said in previous calls, with the startup of a lot of polyethylene plants in the U.S., it is expected that we would suffer increased imports of PE in Brazil from the U.S., and therefore generating a small challenge for us in market share. Second, about the production in the U.S. and Mexico, as Pedro Teixeira mentioned, the U.S. Was a lot about the winter, very severe winter in Texas in the beginning of the last year, which was not the case this year, so we're not suffering as much from that point of view. And pretty large turnaround that took longer than we anticipated at one of our plants. And this year, we don't have any major turnaround. So yes, we do expect that the issues in the U.S. Are behind us. As far as Mexico, it was all about the supply of ethane by Pemex. And Pemex took a series of actions during the year to last year to improve its ability to import ethane into the country, as well as to work on some of the challenges and bottlenecks they have in their own system for production and transportation of ethane. We do expect that the situation now is stable. We don't expect it to improve significantly. It's important to highlight that in a 10-year period, from 2009 to 2018, the local production of ethane in Mexico was reduced by 30%. So it is a period with limited availability of ethane, and we do expect it to be stable. Therefore, a similar situation next year compared to this year. Finally, on the recycling side, this is a topic that is gaining a lot of attention with the media, with consumers, with brand owners, and of course, with our industry. And we've been addressing it as Braskem and as an industry in different ways. The expectation is that recycled plastic will increase its share of use in plastic applications as time goes by. The challenge right now is from a quality and availability of recycled resins to enable it to be a perfect substitute for the virgin resins. And this is one example of action that Braskem is taking to invest in the evaluation and development of recycling technologies to improve quality of the recycled product to enable it to be at more parity with the virgin product. So yes, there will be an impact in demand. But as we continue to have expectations for relevant growth I would say that the recycling would take a part of the growth. So the current plant will continue to need to grow. The regular virgin production needs to grow, but a part of the market growth will be fulfilled. A more relevant part of the growth will be fulfilled by resin, recycled resin, going to the future. As far as the alliance is concerned, as we disclosed and the alliance disclosed, this is a effort that started with around 30 companies that we do have the expectations that more companies will join. The investment of $1.5 billion is the sum of all investments towards the objectives of the alliance being done by the companies and the alliance. And yes, we do expect to invest in this type of actions, and we will have our fair share, let's call it, of investments. We actually believe that proportionally our investment in those topics is going to be much higher than what would be our fair share of the $1.5 billion. We see this topic as a crucial topic for the industry, a crucial topic for Braskem. We have been very focused on sustainability since Braskem's creation, and we've been investing in different formats and in actions around recycling and other types of circular economy activities. And those investments are more than enough to fulfill our commitment to the Alliance investment goal.
Okay, very clear. Just going back to the first question, trying to understand for 2019, can you expect a market share recovery for Braskem given part of the reduction in 2018 was due to some specific problems, or we can expect I still a lot of pressure from imported products? Thank you.
We do expect a market growth to be relevant for Brazil. And under that context, yes, with the improved production in Brazil, we expect to recover some market share. But it's important to remind ourselves of the polyethylene increased production in the U.S. So yes, we do expect a recovery in market share, but it's not going to be very, very strong. It's a minor, small recovery in market share in Brazil, given that situation.
Very clear. Thank you.
Mr. Gabriel Barra from UBS would like to ask a question.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the questions. The first one is regarding the decision on ICMS inclusion in the calculation based off PIS/COFINS. The company has posted something around $450 million of non-recurring result in the fourth quarter 18 EBITDA due to the higher tax paid during 2017 and 18. My question is, how much should we expect on a recurrent basis regarding this new understanding on PIS/COFINS tax? And the second one is regarding the 20F. The company was granted by an additional extension recently until mid-May to file its 2017 20F. In the case of potential delisting, may you provide more color on how does it work and how it could impact the deal with Landau? Thank you.
Hi, Gabriel. This is Pedro Freitas. Thank you for the questions. On ICMS, on PIS/COFINS, so we took the we had two legal cases that were finalized last year, and they were amounted to the 520 million reais of credits that we recovered in the last quarter of last year. You asked about a recurring element going forward. We don't see a lot of that because it's credits and debits that we when we buy, when we sell, and then the net of what we collect when we sell to what we pay when we buy is the amount that we pay. So the legal case was about how those tax income would be calculated. going forward, we don't see a lot of additional results for the company based on that. So it's just adjustment of the way that we calculate those taxes, but they go to the government by the end of the day. So it's, again, not that relevant on a recurring basis. On the 20F, so the scenario is we have an extension by the NYSE until May 16th. So we do have a line of sight to filing the 20F before that. So we are working towards that. It is a complex process, so we cannot be 100% sure that we will get there. But I would say that we do have a plan and a line of sight to getting it before that deadline. In the case that we do go after May 2016, the NYSE will delist the company. What does that mean? It means that we go from the NYC listed, so of the list on the trading floor, to the over-the-counter mark trading environment in the U.S. And that is something that could happen very, very, very soon after May 16th. And after that, I mean, there is an appeals period, so there is a period for us to discuss that with the NYSE. During that appeals period, if we file the 20F, our listing goes automatically back to the NYC trading, regular trading list. So that's how it works. So the main implication is our shares would be, the trading of our shares would go to the over-the-counter environment. So that's the way that the listing works. Impact on Lyondell, and I mean, I would suggest that you ask Lyondell about that. It's their view that would be important there.
Okay, thank you. Back to you.
Ms. Fernanda Cunha from Citibank would like to ask a question.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions and congratulations on the results. I want to follow up on the first question. Regarding the loss in market share, you mentioned that you might recover part of it in 2019. I just wanted to understand if this recovery will come from a stronger growth. I think you have here on your outlook that GDP is growing 2.2 and with a demand elasticity of 1.5, you are currently estimating around 4% growth. So are you thinking of maybe catching up with this growth, or are you planning any commercial strategy of reducing your domestic spreads? The second question I have is regarding capital allocation. You currently have a leverage ratio of around two times, but when we include the dividends to be distributed this year, your leverage ratio is around 2.5. I just wanted to understand what level would you be comfortable with, and also, what's your capital allocation prioritization for this year? Is it maybe to anticipate your expansion projects in the U.S., or are we still thinking about shareholders' returns? And the third question I have is regarding the Mexico project. I just wanted, there has been some changes in the accounting, especially for books under the other revenues. I just wanted to understand what would be the recurring EBITDA for this project. And second, what is your forecast for the utilization rate for this year on the Mexico project, given that we have seen that in January, the ethane production in Mexico has also come down? So I was just trying to understand here if we are around the 80% level or more towards the 70% level. Thank you.
Hello, Fernanda. I'll start with the market share, and then I'll ask Pedro to talk a little bit more about the dividend, and I'll come back with the Mexico.
So the market share is a combination of a couple of factors. The first one is what you described. I mean, higher growth in the local market, where being the local producer with the plants here, inventory on the ground, puts us in a better position to capture growth. Second, as I said, part of the loss was the significant decline in prices globally in the fourth quarter that was really fast and led to decision making that it's easier or faster to cut purchases from us than to stop imports that are on the sea coming to Brazil. So this is part of the rebound we expect, is, I mean, go back to normal in this inventory management by the chain. And third, I mean, we've been developing a series of innovations in product development, improving our ability to compete from a quality service point of view. So we do believe that we are continuing doing this, and that this will contribute for our ability to recover. We're not planning to cut prices to recover market share. We believe we have a healthy balance between the market share we have and the price point that we have. And as I said, the expectation of recovery is small. It's more a contribution of the factors I mentioned before. So I'll hand over to Pedro on the dividend, and I'll come back on the Mexico.
So Fernanda, on the dividend, I would say there are several factors that affected the decision on the dividend proposal. We had the strongest cash flow ever for Braskem last year, so a very good cash position, together with a very comfortable debt position. We don't have any significant short-term pressure in terms of debt maturing. So put together a very strong cash flow, no a big issue in terms of liability management. And added on top of that, we the biggest investment that we have going forward is the Delta project in the U.S., which is on track and is also already, the financing for that has already been arranged. So really going forward, we do see that this trade-off between cash flow and ability to pay dividends and the investments that we have going forward, all of that gives us a very comfortable equation in terms of paying dividends. On top of that, we have last year approved a dividend policy, which gives us the guidelines for paying dividends. And what that policy says is that we should maximize dividends, provided that on a forward-looking basis, looking at the current year plus 2 years ahead, we are comfortable that we will not cross the 2.5 net debt to EBITDA threshold. So we did that exercise, and the projections that we have show that we will not reach the 2.5 net debt to EBITDA threshold. So we don't expect to cross that line. And thus, the analysis showed that we could pay, a higher dividend yield. But compared to the cash flow, if you go back to last year, for example, we paid a little bit more than 100% of the 2017 cash flow. This year, we're paying less than 40% of the 2018 cash flow. So, this all shows that it's a very, comfortable situation, and we really did put a lot of thought on how to approach this. Given that the company is generating a lot of cash, we thought that would be the right approach towards our shareholders.
And going back to the Mexico question, as mentioned before, the supply situation in Mexico was challenging in 2018. We do expect that the situation in 2019 is going to be similar. So the availability of local ethane is still challenging, but Pemex did some actions towards improving its ability to import ethane into the country, and this is already operational. So we do expect to be at the same level that we had in 2018, with an expected lower volatility on a day-by-day or month-to-month availability. So as far as recurring EBITDA, we don't provide guidance, so we wouldn't share any recurring EBITDA.
Okay, thank you guys. Thanks a lot.
Mr. Peter from Barclays would like to ask a question.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. This is Peter Grishenko with Barclays. First question, I wanted to follow up on the Mexico situation. I mean, you did describe what you mentioned, Pemex potentially ramping up imports. But, I mean, is there a scenario where maybe Pemex is not able to grow supply and, you know, you have to import ethane for the cracker? I'm just curious, and, you know, is there an alternative that you can think of?
Hello, Peter. Yes. This is something that we've been evaluating. We have a contract with Pemex that supply that theoretically supplies 100% of our needs. As the past 2 years have shown, Pemex is facing challenges to fulfill its obligation from a volume availability to us. And we see a very positive move that they are working on imports. But as you all are aware, we already are in the business of moving ethane into a cracker. We last year produced 11% of the ethylene in the Bahia cracker using ethane imported from Texas. So we have been looking at what are other options of moving ethane into our cracker. On top of the solutions that Pemex is looking for from an imports point of view. And also, it's important to remember that, I mean, the challenges Pemex faces is not around reserves, it's around productivity. The reserves are there, so they continue to invest and tweak on their operational system at the platform level. And also at the fractionation and transportation to improve their production. But they've been facing challenges on that overall system. So that's why they decided to invest a little bit more on the import option. But we are looking at alternatives as well, either to complement and fulfill the 100% needs or eventually to work on a small debottleneck for the cracker if and when the situation on the current contract with Pemex stabilizes at the 100% delivery.
Got it. Thanks for that. Second question I had, maybe if you could please provide some, you know, color on what you're seeing regarding the polypropylene and PDH capacity additions in North America. Also, I saw, you know, IHS at the, you know, polypropylene imports in the U.S. Spiked kind of late last year. I'm wondering if you think that was just a temporary event given maybe restrictions on the production. You know, you obviously listed, you know, numerous reasons for that, you know, including scheduled shutdowns. But I'm wondering, like, what's your view on the margins in North America is for this year?
Yeah, the situation in the U.S. is clearly a situation of tight markets. As for the balance of supply and demand of PP, this is what drove us to the decision to invest last year in the or a couple of years ago in the construction of this new plant that is coming. There are other plants already announced. Formosa is building a smaller plant than ours. And Exxon, a couple of weeks ago, announced that they will start construction of a polypropylene plant similar size to ours in the U.S. as well, which, from my point of view, confirms the read that we had that the market would need at least three new polypropylene plants 18 to 21, 22 time frame, and now we have ours and Exxon and Formosus. On top of this, there are a couple of projects being discussed in Canada, which would incorporate a propane to propylene PDH project together with PP lines to transform the propylene into PP. So these two, there are currently two projects being talked about and apparently receiving funds from their sponsors. They would also help to balance the market. We do expect that the spread in US PP market will see improvement in 19 because a lot of the new capacity, the first one to come into the market is going to be ours, and it's early 2020. And therefore, with the still very strong demand profile that we see, the market will need imports. One important aspect is that a good part of this import is from ourselves. We do ship product from Brazil into the U.S. and leverage our local presence and our local portfolio of production to facilitate that process. So we do expect increased imports to fulfill that gap. And from our own market share, we do expect our ability to produce to be a little bit higher this year. We don't have the large turnaround, and we didn't have the challenge in the beginning of the year that we faced with the winter and a couple of other smaller upsets. So we do expect to have more products locally produced and a little bit more coming from Brazil to help us fill the gaps that we see in the market, given the very healthy demand profile.
Got it. That's very helpful. Thank you for that. And another question I had on maybe if you can comment on the liability management front. You know, how do you think of the, you know, 2020, 21 maturities? Would you consider, you know, raising new bond and like type of financing? Would you contemplate?
So, Peter, we do have, there is a bond maturing in 2020, but it's not a very large amount of outstanding, about $400 million. And then $1 billion maturing in 2021. So it's part of our discussion for this year, the refinancing of that. It's an ongoing discussion in the company how we're going to address that and when. There is also the discussion about market timing. I mean, there are several different alternatives that we can pursue doing that. I mean, we could do something here in the Brazilian market, which is very liquid right now. The European market looks attractive for certain types of deals as well. So we're looking at the different alternatives, and when the time is right, we'll come to the market with those operations.
And I just want to reinforce and highlight that, I mean, it's a 2021 question, so we have time to think and discuss this 2020 bonds. I mean, it's proportionally to our expected cash flow generation.
Got it. And last, if I may, you know, there were some headlines recently from the government officials and Petrobras, you know, regarding their sort of incentive to, you know, to do the stake. I'm curious if you can maybe provide any recent thoughts or update on the process with Landel.
Okay. So on the Landel-Basel deal, as we mentioned several times over last year, management is not part of the negotiations. We supported the due diligence, which has been completed. I think the best status update has been given by Bob Patel when they Landel disclosed results. So he talked about the deal. So I'll repeat what he said, that the due diligence was done, it was high quality, and now that they were in conversations with the Brash about finalizing the dialogue between the two of them to decide how to proceed. So, we're not part of the negotiations. We're not part of the process. Therefore, there's not much else we can say beyond what Landel has already shared publicly, which is the best information I have.
Got it. Fair enough. Thank you very much, and best of luck to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Ms. Liliana Yang from HSBC would like to ask a question.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I actually have two questions. One is more straightforward, right? It is on the federal tax credits of PIS/COFINS over the feedstock. I wonder if you see any risks of Braskem losing such credits in the near term. The other question is, again, on Mexico. I actually have two smaller questions within here. The first one is, I saw you booked again from the non-compliance of the ethane supply contract with Pemex. So could you clarify how fast the about $90 million receivables can become cash? And how much would you say you have as of now in terms of receivables from Pemex? Because I would assume they might have grown from December to February. And related to this, could you just let us know the update of your alternative supply route plans, something that you kind of guided you thinking of and studying, in the last third quarter earnings call. Thank you.
Hello, Eliana. On the federal tax credit around purchasing a feedstock in Brazil, the what's called REIQ, there was a lot of discussion last year about termination of that program. It ended up not being terminated. I would say that if you listen to what the government is saying, there's an expectation of dealing with some of the reforms that are needed in the country. One of them around tax and the tax system in Brazil. We do expect that any of, given everything that Paulo Guedes, the finance minister, is saying, that any changes will take into consideration the competitiveness of local Brazilian production. They see as an important factor the industrial fabric that exists in Brazil. So any changes would be somehow compensated / mitigated, but other changes that facilitate doing business in Brazil, reduce what we call the Brazil cost around infrastructure, logistics, or other complexities around doing business in Brazil from a tax or other topics point of view. So it's going to depend on what the government does and how they proceed with their reform plan. In the short term, we don't expect any change, but we need to continue to monitor the different reforms that the government is prioritizing, with the pension reform being the top priority now. And I think it's going to depend a lot on how this goes, that we'll have more clarity on what they want to do. As far as the Mexico situation, as I said before, we're working on alternative routes. Some of them are in quote-unquote partnership with Pemex, leveraging their infrastructure, and some of them do not include any leveraging of Pemex structure. Those evaluations are still underway. We have not made any decision. We do expect to start to make decisions at some point this year. It depends a lot on the engineering studies and the commercial conversations that we have with potential partners for those alternatives. So my expectation is that we'll have a decision sometime in 2019. Some of the alternatives have very short cycle investments to be operational. Others take a little bit longer, and this is also going to be a factor in our decision making. As far as the liquidated damages in the Mexico contract, I'll ask Pedro to address your question.
Yeah. So Liliana, nice talking to you. We have as of December 2018. Close to $51 million in receivables, in liquidated damage receivables from Pemex. So that's what is included in the balance sheet. And we have received through the year in cash $56 million from Pemex. So that is kind of the cash situation and the balance sheet situation regarding to that.
Just to complement, would you give color if this amount is increasing this year or if it's relatively stable? Thanks.
It's very hard to forecast. It's a function of the Pemex supply, so it depends a lot.
And the same price.
And the same price. So it depends on certain factors going forward. In terms of cash flow, I mean, Pemex has 6 months to make up for the shortfall that they have. So a portion of this provision, a portion of the shortfall they had, they could make up for given with additional ethane. Given the scenario, I mean, it depends a lot on their supply situation. But again, I mean, it's very hard to looking forward to understand or to forecast what the year is going to be to look like.
Thank you. And if I may, can I ask a quick question on CAPEX? You have the 2019 guidance. It is up when I exclude the PP project in the U.S. So could you let us know if there's anything that is more big and major and non-recurring so that I can think of what is appropriate maintenance CAPEX for 2020 and onwards?
So,
in other words, 2 billion reais or 2.5, what's the right level?
So the total is 3.3 billion reais. The PP plant in the U.S. is 800 million reais. So the net of that is a bit less than 2.5 billion reais for 2019. We do have a large turnaround in the fourth quarter of 2019 in the northeast of Brazil. So that is relevant. Our kind of ballpark number going forward is about $600 million of operational capex every year. So that's how we're looking at it. But we do have a large turnaround in the last quarter of this year.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Mr. Luis Carvalho from UBS would like to ask a question.
Hi, Musa. Hi, Pedro. Hi, Ivana. Thank you for taking the question again after Barra. I just have a quick follow-up. The first one is related to the NAFTA contract negotiation with Petrobras. If you have any update in terms of the development, in terms of this contract, apparently Petrobras has been mentioning that this wouldn't be an issue for them actually to oppose to the deal. So if you have any insights on this, that would be good. The second point is any update on Mexico import capacity due to the Pemex and lack of supply. Are you still considering to increase the import capacity, the feedstock import capacity to the country? And if I may, a third question. I remember one investor days, you mentioned that in terms of the EBITDA level, we should think at a bottom close to $3 billion. With the Mexican plant running at a full capacity, if I can put it this way. With the guidance that you provided yesterday in terms of CAPEX and also, I mean, due to the year two, some of the views on the spread front, we are coming to a number a bit lower than that, meaning with the year two, the new Mexico utilization rate. Could you try to give us a range where you think that, and under your best estimate, the EBITDA for 2019 would be? Thank you.
Hello, Luis. First, on the NAFTA contract, I cannot talk about any potential conversation between LyondellBasell and Petrobras on the topic. As discussed before, we're not part of the negotiation. What I can say about the NAFTA contract relationship between Braskem and Petrobras is what I've been saying for a while now, is that we have a five-year contract that expires now in 2 years' time. And 2019 is the year where we start the conversation with Petrobras around the renegotiation of that contract.
under a scenario that there's no view, and so the this is a second half of the year discussion with Petrobras. It would give us 18 months to work on it until the expiration of the contract in December 2020. So right now, it's not part of the dialogue between myself and my team with Petrobras, and should become part of it in the second half of the year. On the import capacity, as I said before, Pemex did some improvements in their ability to import and are already operating that. We discussed with them alternatives to improve their ability to import in their own infrastructure, but we are also looking at our own alternative routes for imports so that we can manage the supply situation in Mexico or eventually even improve it beyond the current contract supposed availability from the Pemex contract. And we, as far as your last question, I mean, we don't provide guidance. So what we've been discussing in some meetings with investors is not a bottom, but I mean a
ballpark
expected average in the cycle kind of EBITDA in the $2.5 to $3 billion. Being a good number for an analysis.
That's without Mexico. If you add Mexico, you would find somewhere around a bit less than 3 to 3.5.
Exactly. So this is not a guidance. This was a ballpark average cycle evaluation for our dialogue with investors so that they understand the volatility that they should expect and to explain that given our new global footprint, we have more resilience and less total volatility in our expected EBITDA and therefore cash flow going forward. I just want to correct, one, we do not provide guidance, and two, the ballpark that we might have been discussing was not a low end of the cycle kind of number. It was more an average expectation / ballpark than anything else.
Okay, clear. Thank you very much.
Mr. Bruno Montanari from Morgan Stanley would like to ask a question.
Hello, thanks for taking the question. Just a quick follow-up on something you mentioned on the last question. If Braskem indeed starts to develop its own infrastructure to import feedstock into Mexico, how does the contract with Pemex work? In other words, if you import yourself, is Pemex off the hook in having to paying the take-or-pay or deliver-or-pay fine? So how does one reconcile the imports versus the penalties that Pemex has to pay?
Hi, Bruno. Any alternative that we might develop by ourselves does not have impact on obligations by Pemex or ourselves under the current contract. So this would be an alternative either to increase the certainty of supply or even to increase the total amount of supply of the plant. So no direct impact. There is no provision that if we are able to bring our own ethane that Pemex is off the hook whatsoever.
All right, very clear. Thanks a lot.
I'll turn over to the company for closing remarks.
I would like to thank all of you for participating in the call and for the dialogue during the year. As we discussed in the presentation and in the Q&A, we had a year of good results, very strong cash flow generation, And we do expect that the 2019 will lead to similar type of results, given that, despite a scenario where most of our products will face international spreads compression, given the cycle, we do expect positive uptick from demand in Brazil, from demand in the U.S., and on the internal side, the challenges we face from an operational point of view that led to reduced utilization rate in 2018 yielded a loss around $250 to $300 million of EBITDA once we apply the average margins that we experienced during the year. And as we do not see any of those happening and do not anticipate any of those happening at this level, there is another relevant uptick from internal improved product efficiency and effectiveness in the operational side. So thank you very much for being here with us, and looking forward to the next dialogue once we publish the first quarter results in a couple of months. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's Braskem's earnings conference call. You may disconnect your lines at this time.